2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro. Up, everybody, and welcome back to the DFS Army Bowl Call Season 1 Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Allen, a.k.a. the Fantasy Football Geek. I got my man, Season Long Says, the DFS Army Season Long Fantasy Football Specialist, here with me. What's up, Says?
Hello, hello. We are here. It is the final draft weekend, and I got one more left. I'm excited about that one. Mine's tomorrow night with you, with the DFS Army crew. How many drafts do you have left?
I have two, and both of them are DFS Army staff slash, kind of DFS Army staff league. So what? Apparently I'm in all of the staff leagues.
As you should be. You are the CEO.
I know, but I do want to give other people a chance to win a league once in a while. I feel bad. I feel bad, but I don't feel bad. So our first staff league draft is tonight, and there will be a second one tomorrow night.
What pick do you have?
All right. I don't know which one is which, but I know in one I have pick number 7, and in the other one I have pick number 11.
Okay. Well, I mean, I like every position this year. There's nothing I don't like, especially with a lot of news that we have to cover, a lot of things that happened over the last 24 hours that definitely may have changed the landscape quite a bit. Usually that it doesn't happen, but it has happened this time.
Yeah, I mean, I think where you're picking this year is definitely interesting because the whole Zeke situation, which we'll talk about momentarily. Let's talk about what the topic of this podcast is. This brings it back around to that, which is, you know, we're going to cover all of the running back influx situations, Zeke, Gordon, KC. In this pod, we're going to talk about down and dirty strategies for your draft based on where you're drafting, because I get a lot of questions. Hey, I'm drafting here. What should I do? I'm drafting there. What should I do? And, you know, we've all done enough drafts at this point that we've got a pretty good idea of what questions and choices you're going to be facing at various positions. We're going to go over some bold calls at the end of this podcast. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's basically going to be last-minute draft advice. You have your draft. You've changed it around. Things over the last 24 hours have sent you in a little bit of confusion. What do I do with Damian Williams? What do I do with this guy? How much do I bump up that guy? And we're going to give you some last-minute advice. You can go in, and hopefully it'll be helpful when making those key decisions.
I love it. And that's where we're at this point. If you haven't at least done some prep work, and it is Sunday, you know, September 1st, 7 days before the season starts, and, you know, really 4 days before the official start of the NFL season on Thursday night. I don't know. Yeah, it's too late. I mean, grab the DFS Army draft kit. You've got our rankings there.
Yeah, that's what's so good about the draft kit, that you can literally walk in not having done much or any prep and just use our rankings if you trust our crazy opinions.
Can I tell you one of the things I'm really proud about, like, what's happened? And, you know, the season hasn't started yet. But a couple of calls, I really feel happy that we've had our subscribers, our members, our listeners who have been listening to the Bold Calls podcast since we started doing them in May. We're warned off of, for example, the Kansas City running back situation.
Oh, we were avoiding those. I mean, at the cost. We were not in on Damian Williams as a first-round pick, as a second-round pick, and certainly now not as a third-round pick.
You know, it seems obvious now, but to have that information in front of you in May, especially for best ball leagues, like, hey, we get it. This guy is going at the top of the second round. Don't fucking draft him.
This was what we said, specifically, if you go back and listen. And again, it was just an opinion. It was a take based on information we had. With Damian Williams, what we said was, usually, the guy who comes out of nowhere, who's been around the NFL for about 4 or 5 years, that dominates the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season, and then as a second round pick the following year is a good fade, because it's, you know, you're going to make more money than not fading that. Now, it does go wrong sometimes, but we've named multiple examples, and Damian Williams falls in that category. He's going into year five or so. He came out of nowhere. He hadn't done anything in the NFL, dominated the, you know, the fantasy.
Yeah, let's
playoffs.
Not even go through all the reasons, because we got to talk about Damian Williams in a minute, so I don't want to waste that.
Yeah.
Before we do that, let's just get right into it, because we've got a lot of things in flux right now. And I think the biggest question that everybody's facing when they're taking, when they're in their draft in the first round is, what the fuck am I going to do about Zeke? Okay. So let's cover this situation, break it down. Tell me, what the fuck should I do about Zeke?
Yeah. I mean, I've said all along in the chat rooms, on Twitter, that he should not fall past pick four. There was a 2 or 3 day window where there was no news, so people got skeptical, and he tumbled down the board. All the signs all along pointed to a deal getting done, and now the signs are really positive. The tell sign was, even when it got a little negative a few days ago, Jay Glazer said in The Athletic that he was close to as certain as you can be that Zeke Elliott was going to show up for week one. And sure enough, that has, you know, it looks good.
Nothing's a done deal, but the rumors are that they're dotting some T's and crossing some I's.
They say they're crossing their T's and they're dotting their I's, and the old joke is there's a lot of I's and T's in Elliott. So
there
we go. They're still going to be a little bit, but the latest Tuesday is what they said for a deal on Elliott. Now, if I'm drafting tonight, I'm taking him as high as 2. I still like Barkley at 1. But, you know, if you're not comfortable with that, is there a chance he's still going to miss week 1? Absolutely. Let me ask you a question. What would you do if you knew for certain he was signed, but they said he needs a week just to get up to speed, he's going to miss week 1? Where would you take him?
That does not affect my draft at all. I would still take him where I think he's worth. And I have to say, and I'm gonna go against a little bit against the grain here. If you take away this contract bullshit, I can make a very strong argument that Zeke should be taken number one overall, above Saquon Barkley. Zeke, really, there's a strong argument for him to be the top guy, and it's mainly because I think his team is better than the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think is the role of Tony Pollard when Zeke comes back? Is there any role? Is he earned a, you know, just a change of pace? I mean, how many touches? Tony Pollard in college at Memphis was an elite return guy. So I definitely anticipate that he's going to be the return guy. That doesn't really affect Zeke. But how many touches? I mean, whereas before you might project maybe 5, can you project 8 or 9 touches per game for Pollard, or more like 4 to 7?
I think he's in the 4 to 7. I think he's coming in to spell Zeke when Zeke is tired, you know. Not in the same way that, like, maybe a Jalen Samuels might come in to spell John Cotton, or even less. Like, basically, I'm not worrying about Tony Pollard at all.
Yep, you see that highlight right there? Look at this right here. Boom.
Yeah.
Zeke, reach it. I mean, you got to take him at 2. I mean, if he falls to 4 in our DFS Army draft, I'm happy to take him. So,
well, now he's not going to, because you're fucking telling everybody.
And that's fine. Like, you know, I'm happy with any of the 4, but if he's the guy, if they don't like the risk, then I'm happy to do it. Look at this. Oh, these highlights. Look at this. The speed, the power. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, Zeke is the man. All right. So the word is basically this deal, it looks like it's close to getting done. Obviously, there is always risk. The guy is not signed yet. We don't know. We are not in the room. Shit happens. But, you know, all the most connected people seem to think this is going to get done. So, look out for maybe losing Zeke in week 1, or maybe not getting a fully ready to take on more than, you know, 10 or 15 touches in the first game of the season kind of Zeke guy. Maybe a week or two to get up to the swing of things. What are you going to do? But for all intents and purposes, it looks like the deal will get done with him. All right, let's move on to the KC running back situation. A triangle, a love triangle of sorts.
Yeah. I mean,
Bermuda Triangle of sorts, not a love triangle.
Yeah,
Bermuda Triangle where you get lost trying to figure out what the fuck is happening.
Okay, so let's just review for anyone that doesn't have a computer, Twitter, or just is hiding under a rock. Damian Williams is the lead running back, and Carlos Hyde was cut. Darwin Thompson, the rookie sixth rounder, who looked really good, was then looking like the number two running back, and people were aggressively drafting him. I saw him go as high as the fifth or sixth round in redraft leagues, which is crazy. But the right place was probably around the ninth or tenth round. Looked good.
Oh, the Darwin owners are now experiencing Darwinism in live action. You do stupid things and you become extinct in fantasy football terms.
Yeah, I mean it was an unnecessary risk, put it that way. You know, that's basically how I saw it. It was, you know, I understand the new shiny toy. It's it's happening with Singletary a little bit. We can talk about that after, but let's just get back to.
I feel differently about Singletary.
All right, we'll discuss it. So,
all right, let me lay it out.
Mm-hmm.
LeSean McCoy signed $4 million, real money for a running back position.
Yeah,
right?
that's really good money on a 1-year deal. That's paying him like a top 10 running back.
Guaranteed. This is a veteran. So at least $1 million of it is guaranteed. Now, you've got this Darwin situation happening. You've got the presumed starter who, you know, had a few great games at the end of last season, but not a volume guy. So break down the situation for me. Are we looking at a dreaded Bermuda Triangle of three running backs being used? Are we talking about LeSean McCoy coming in and taking over, or is he shot? What can we expect? We already know that if you took Williams in the first, second, third round, you're done fucked up.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? It's not a complete disaster. I just think that the week-to-week consistency for Damian Williams is certainly going to be affected. You know, whereas you were happy to plug him in as your RB2, you know, right now you definitely took a body blow on that one. You know, where would I take Damian Williams now? It's probably like round 5, but you can't be confident week to week because Mike Clay from ESPN, who I think is one of the better projection guys in the whole industry, he projected, Damian Williams to be around 9 touches per game, and he has, LeSean McCoy leading the team in carries.
If you're only getting 9 touches out of Damian Williams,
right?
It's
a disaster.
It's a disaster. Yeah.
Right. But they are 9 Kansas City touches, so let's say that's worth, you know, a little bit more. Let's say it's about on average 12, and he's able to do some damage on 12 touches. So, yeah, you know, with the explosive offense,
give me a recent player that we can compare to this situation where that was a useful flex player, like or a guy that you might have put, like, is this Duke Johnson vintage, you know, Cleveland usage? Is this you know, like vintage Darren Sproles? What is our comparable here? Is this Danny Woodhead with the Chargers?
Yes,
circa
that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, I think that,
or whatever the fuck that guy was around.
Yeah, Danny Woodhead actually was an RB1 for many years. So that's what I'm saying. He does have that upside. I think you can count on some weeks 8 touches, on some weeks 14 touches. I don't think you're going to see 18 to 20 touch games for Damian Williams. They want to, you know, everyone always says Andy Reid uses a single back, but I think also he coaches the personnel and he doesn't want to see his running backs get worn down. They're looking to win a Super Bowl this year. Okay, so I think they're going to use a full-blown committee. Now, if it's a 2-person committee, that's fine. The problem is if it's a 3-person committee. Now, if Darwin Thompson comes in and, we got a comment. It says, easy, Vikings are going to win. Vikings Super Bowl, win it last. Oh, my God. All right, Vikings Super Bowl. We'll talk about that in a moment. And then we had another comment from Scott said, once he signed, would you drop Pollard? Oh, he's talking about Zeke. Verify. Yeah. I wouldn't drop Pollard.
I mean, if you have Zeke on your team, you want to keep Pollard as his handcuff anyway.
It's a high yield. But yeah, back to what we said before is they're going to be a two-person committee, no problem. If Darwin Thompson's going to come in and be a 3-4 touch guy, that's no big deal. But if Darwin Thompson's like a 7-9 touch guy and it's a full-on three-blown committee here, that's a problem. That's a problem.
My prediction is that Darwin Thompson will fade into obscurity and he will get 2 or 3 touches a week. That's my prediction.
Okay. I mean, yeah. And then if an injury happens, which, remember, LeSean McCoy had a couple of injuries, you know, 2 hamstring injuries that kept him out of multiple games. He's 31 years old. So, yeah, it's certainly possible that Darwin Thompson is relevant at some point. I'm not sure if to start the season he's going to be a roster clogger. And if you drafted him in the 7th, 8th, 9th round, it's going to hurt to cut him. But there's something called a sunk cost. Sometimes when you're going fishing and they're pulling and you can't get the line back, you cut the line because you don't want to lose the whole rod. And I think that's what applies here as well.
I would wait and see the first week at least. You know, no rush to drop.
Right. I'm just saying is that when you need to do it, don't worry about it. You know, I mean, and you know what? He's going to be pickup and playable at another point this season, and maybe someone else will get him. So, and if you can't handle that, just hold on to him. But if a Philip Lindsay type pulls up and shows itself, and you need to go in, and Darwin Thompson's your on your bench, and you got nobody else to cut, you might have to do it at some point. It's facing facts. And remember, the guys that win these high stakes fantasy.
Wait, let me throw this at you. Hang on. Where are we drafting LeSean McCoy?
I mean,
is LeSean McCoy better at this point than Damian Williams?
I mean, it's debatable, but I'm not there yet. I'm still taking Damian Williams probably in the 5th round if he falls. He probably won't. And LeSean McCoy, I'd like to get him in the 9th round, but it feels like he's going to be a 7th or 8th round player, doesn't it?
It feels like he'll be taken too high. I am just so happy that I've had Damian Williams ranked like 23rd, 22nd all offseason anyway.
Yeah, I moved him to 18. I had him up at 13 at one point. You know what it is? Both of these running backs become appealing if you're trying to do a zero running back strategy where you go wide receiver and tight end heavy in the beginning. So if you bang those the first 3 rounds of wide receiver and tight end, maybe 4 rounds, LeSean McCoy, a bunch of other guys, I would add to the zero RB targets.
Yeah, that's fine. Totally. But again, going to be tough to know week to week. We haven't seen a productive LeSean McCoy. Let's flip it around before we get to Gordon. Let's flip it around and let me ask you about, since McCoy left the Bills, because this is really part of the situation. The word on the street is that mayhaps Devin Singletary will be the featured back for this Bills team that features a running quarterback where in the past, not last season, not with McCoy, but in the past, we've seen that running quarterbacks have actually been a very positive complement to a running back when the offense is designed correctly. We have a running quarterback in Josh Allen. We've seen mediocre names like Alfred Morris do very well with RG3 at times. We've seen Lamar Jackson's team feature a bunch of quality running back performances because a running quarterback provides a certain kind of distraction that really does help opposing running back or his running back. So give me an outlook for Singletary. I've moved him up to number 25 on my rankings, 25, 26, right after Miles Sanders. But give me an idea of your breakdown right now of Devin Singletary. Is he flex startable week 1? Is he a bench stash with high upside? What do you say? And who? And do you take him over Duke Johnson?
No, Duke Johnson, I would take over him. I'm not as high on Singletary as you are. Devin Singletary is not a very good athlete. He's an 18th percentile athlete with agility. I mean, he looks like a pretty good tackle breaker. He's not particularly fast at 4.6 in the combine. Looks like a pretty good back, a first and second down thumper. He could win the job, but Frank Gore is there, and Frank Gore, as much as we don't like him, is a fantasy mosquito. He is somebody that is annoying for fantasy because he's the fantasy mosquito.
Yeah.
There you go. Get it out of there. We're experimenting with some new technology. There you go.
You know I was going to bring this.
Yep. For those of you watching, I just put a graphic of a mosquito up on the screen. I'm pretty quick, you know, and this is our new StreamYard premium that we're using, you know. No, Devin Singletary, I think he's going to be a part of a committee. Frank Gore's there. He certainly, the coaches love him everywhere he goes, and he gets about 10, 11 touches a game. I think he's an interesting last round play and a zero RB play, a late round running back guy. And let's not forget
how far you're taking him, like the last pick.
I'm not, but you know,
you're not if I'm taking him at the last pick, you're like,
if I'm super desperate running back, if I literally punted running back and, you know, I only have two on my roster by that point or three, and I'm just, you know, I need one. I don't mind picking him up. I really don't.
Can I present a counterpoint to this?
Let me just finish and I'll zip it up quickly here. Okay. And also, 25-year-old TJ Yeldon, who is a very capable pass catcher, is there too. Now, I'm not saying he's good, but if TJ Yeldon is getting the third down work and Frank Gore splitting touches, I'm not saying Devin Singletary won't emerge from this, but I'm just saying you can't spend a 6th, 7th, 8th round pick on the guy. You're going to have to. But it's going to, I just need to temper expectations and fight through the first few weeks where it might be frustrating.
Okay, that's fair. My main counterpoint is TJ Yeldon is absolutely proven himself that he is not a three down back in this league.
Yeah,
but he's every opportunity to be that guy.
Do you agree he can catch passes, though?
He can catch passes. He is a NFL player, he's a football player in the National Football League. So he has a pass catching skill, he has the skill set. But he has not been a guy who's been able to hold down a starting position. So it's not there for him. Frank Gore is 37 years old. Like 5 years past when any other running back can still hold up. I know he's defied all odds. I know that he is the mosquito.
You like that?
Put the mosquito up, man.
You want the mosquito back up? There you go.
Yes, I had to say one more time.
But try it again. Say he's the mosquito.
I know he's the mosquito, just buzzing around and stinging whoever, all of the fantasy points potential of anybody in his wake, right? But I'm going to spray some off on in the form of Devin Singletary here. I'm not saying he's going to be the man week one or that you want to put him into your starting lineup in week one. I'm talking about you're taking this guy after all of the good running backs are gone. Okay, we're not talking about taking him over, like, you know, even Philip Lindsay or Devonta Freeman or some shit like that. All the good guys are gone. At the very least, he has the chance to emerge. It's a young guy on a team that's young. I don't understand what possible use they're going to throw the old man out there. Gore will get hurt at some point. All of a sudden, this guy's getting all the carries. I'm just saying I like the potential upside here. There are others. Do I like Miles Sanders more? Yes. Do I like Darius Geis more? Yes. But, you know, I like him maybe a little bit better. Do I like Tevin Coleman more? Yes.
Here's your Devin Singletary highlights up on the screen, by the way.
There we go. Look at him crushing tackle. All right, well, getting tackled. He just caught a pass. The guy can catch passes in the National Football League. Here comes another pass to Singletary.
Yeah, and I mean, he's a tough running back. He can break tackles.
Look at that.
Is he wearing number 40? Number 40. That's a weird number for running back. I like that. It feels like,
you know, they give the guys who they're not sure are going to stick with the team number 40. I guarantee you he's not going to be wearing number 40.
Oh, no. He was drafted in the third round, man. He was, you know, him and David Montgomery went back to back picks. So Chicago picked Montgomery in the real draft, and then Buffalo took Singletary with the very next pick.
I think you're worrying too much about draft statistics and numbers and athletic. The guy's a third round pick. The team wants him to be successful. They don't give a fuck about old man Gore. They don't give a shit about retread TJ Yeldon. So I like taking the shot on this guy. And if it doesn't work out, I still think he's getting carries. I think he's going to be getting carries. And maybe by three or four games into the season, this guy will be getting 15, 17 touches a game.
That's possible.
In an offense with a running quarterback. I don't know how that we got to the Bills. With a running quarterback that we have seen in the past, those offenses complement the running back position. So I'm just not ready to write him off. I'm not ready to take some like Ito Smith type of
But you're not getting him, and you're not getting him there. Like, he's going in like the 6th, 7th
you're
round now.
In high dollar leagues with people in the know.
So you're talking about like your home leagues.
I'm talking about in your home league. This guy is still there in the lab. No one even knows who Devin Singletary is.
I don't know about that.
DFS Army League, we're not going to get him because everybody's watching this fucking.
Yeah, not only that, it's just I think you know, there's so much information out there now, and everyone has, you know, there's no sleepers anymore. I think people are smarter than you think. No one's a novice at fantasy football anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone I know, like, the newer
people.
People
who are novices. There's no way. I've seen some people post their drafts, and I'm like, how the fuck did you get, you know, Chris McCaffrey and, like, Chubb on the same team?
Saying is everyone's been playing for 5 years. We've been playing for 20 years. I mean, people have been playing 10 years, 12 years. There's no novice. You're not going to walk into your draft unless it's just some crazy work league where nobody pays attention and, you know, someone's still taking Tim Tebow in the first round. You know, it's a, here you go. Got retread rolling on the floor laughing. Scott said, is he talking about McCoy as a retread? Probably.
No. TJ Yeldon is a retread. Man. Yeldon, he fucking sucks. Remember when he was being. All right. It doesn't matter. All right. Let's move on to the next topic on the docket. It's pronounced Gordon. A lot of people don't know that. Melvin Gordon. Now, I understand that the, what is his name, Tom Telesco?
Yeah, that's the GM of the
GM of the Chargers, who we already knew is one of the most ruthless, blood-sucking GMs in the entire NFL. They are known for this, the Chargers. They're not some pushover team. This ain't the Falcons. This ain't the Jets. Has said, we're going to put the Melvin Gordon situation to rest for this year. We'll revisit it in the offseason. Now, it's like the worst. They told his agent, yeah, go ahead. Look for a trade. Which, no one wants to trade for him. No team has called at all.
You know why? Let's talk about why. Okay, so it's not that they don't think he's a good player. It's just that a good running back in the NFL makes around $4 or $5 million. The elite guys, Le'Veon Bell, they're at $14 million. That Zeke wants north of that. But like Devonta Freeman, he's around 10. He got paid really well. LeSean McCoy, even though he's not an elite talent anymore, he is still making pretty good elite money at $4 million a year. Melvin Gordon wants $10 million a year, plus he wants those three years guaranteed. The Chargers still have him under contract for this year. He needs to report this year before, I believe it's like week 8 or 9, in order to accrue a league year. So to say he's going to be traded, I think that's short-sighted, because what team, one, is going to give up an asset, and even if they do, you'd have to sign him for the money he wants. And it's not, even though I want them to get their money, I just don't think it's doable in this specific market. Austin says, rolling with Mahomes, geek. Mahomes, geek. So,
rolling with Mahomes.
Yeah. We'll talk about Patrick Mahomes momentarily. But yeah, that's the problem. Melvin Gordon trade. I was like, trade him to Tampa. Trade him here. The team, they're not going to pay. They're going to be stuck with the same problem the Chargers are. And the Chargers, I've already said, they're comfortable with Austin Eckler as their number one running back. They like Justin Jackson. You know, let's
talk about this for a second. Are we sure that Austin Eckler is the number one running back?
I think so, yeah. I think that he's going to at least be a 55% share guy. So I'm not saying he's going to dominate 70% of the touches, but I think it's pretty safe to say when you add up the catches and the carries, he's really good. The coaches really like him, and he's been really efficient with his touches. So I think it's, you know, minimum of 50%, but I would probably bet on like 55 to 60% of the touches.
I'm going to just throw this warning out there about Austin Eckler. That I do believe there is some sentiment that the role that he's in for the Chargers is a perfect role for him, and that if they overwork him, he'll get injured. He's not built for like that, kind of like a Breida from San Francisco who looked good, but you could just tell all of last season he is not a guy that is built for even 15 to 18 touches a game.
And he's not gonna get that kind of workload. You know?
Well, the reason I'm saying it is because Justin Jackson is available. Like with the last, no one even know that motherfucker's probably on waivers in your league right now that you already drafted. He's there. He's available. Meanwhile, Austin Eckler's being taken like right after Devin Singletary, or maybe before. So do you have Eckler ahead of or behind Singletary? You hate Singletary, so you
no, no, no. I don't hate Singletary. Okay. I just think that, you know, we're projecting opportunity. Like Singletary, in my projections, is probably going to start the season with about 10 to 13 touches, perfectly fine. And you're going to have to wait and see. And if he scores it, if you want to start Singletary, like you can't really start him with confidence in week one. You start him and you hope you get a touchdown, right? Because the pass work is projected.
I'm not confident in Austin Eckler to get a touchdown.
Okay, well, and that's fair. But I think Eckler on a good team is projected to get, you know, 55% of the work. I would say you can project probably 2 to 4 catches for him. And if you are thin at running back or you need a flex play, or if you just frankly, if you punted running back, which I did in a draft where I went super wide receiver heavy, and I ended up with Eckler and Duke Johnson. I'm starting both of those running backs, but you know, I'm loaded at tight end and wide receiver. You know, I have just a murderer's row of pass catchers.
You know, somebody showed me a lineup that looked similar to that, and I was like, "Oh, you went zero RB." You know, hey, that's you know, that's cool. But my point is this: I gotta pay an eighth round price for Austin Eckler. Fine.
Hey, by the way, you see Austin Hansen's comment just went up. He has a $200 entry draft coming up, and he appreciates our info. So, you know, we're glad we can help there, Austin. $200 bucks is harder than clams.
There we go. I mean, wait till part two of this where we're going to talk about a little bit of strategy from where you are in your draft spot, because it's so many questions along those lines. So I really want to cover that as well here. But my point with the RB situation, and if you drafted Melvin Gordon, you're fucked. Okay, accept it now. You done fucked up.
Well, it depends where you drafted him. Depends where.
If you drafted him, you drafted him right around Philip Lindsay area. So you needed to take him RB 20, 21, 22 in order to have him right now. And if that happened, you done fucked up because it doesn't look good for this guy.
Yeah, I passed on him everywhere.
I passed on him everywhere too. But if you have him, you're in trouble. Sorry. Accept it. And then, move forward.
You drop him.
Recover from this. What?
You don't drop him.
No, 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 no. You got to hold him. See what happens. But so, what I'm saying is, accept it and move forward. Don't hold your head down. Shit happens. You took a shot. Doesn't always work out. If it does work out, still great. But I think you knew when you were drafting him, you were taking a lot of risk. Okay. Now the other thing is, just Jackson. All I'm saying is, he's available.
Yeah, no, I like Justin Jackson.
You can get him now. He's
yeah,
available.
No, it's a great play. It's a great play. Yeah, okay. I love the Justin Jackson. I'm just saying is that Eckler is going to be a really nice piece for fantasy because even, let's say, Melvin Gordon came back tomorrow, Justin Jackson is a zero, which, again, you don't care because it's a last-round pick, but Eckler is still useful. He's still going to have a role.
Eckler was a flex play even with Melvin Gordon.
And that's where the value is. So it's a great decision point. I can't tell you Eckler is going to be better than Devin Singletary for the whole. I can just tell you I think Singletary is going to start off with 10 touches. I think Eckler is going to start off with 55% of the work, and you know probably be reduced to about 38 to 40% when Melvin Gordon returns.
I love it. All right, let's move on to what everybody is waiting to talk about: actual draft strategy. Who do I take where? What positions do I attack in different kinds of leagues? So I was talking to somebody today, and I was kind of highlighting the difference between a 10-team league and a 12-team league, and it's a very, very important difference. My opinion here: 10-team league, there is no issue in terms of depth of team. You're going to get lots of great players. You're going to get great names. Your bench is going to be filled with guys who can start in other types of leagues. You know, your bench is filled with like Boyd and like guys who you're excited to get as a starter. So in a 10-team league, my strategy for people is almost always going to be just take studs wherever you can. Even take a quarterback, Mahomes around two. You want top-level studs at every position group, right? So don't worry about like drafting for depth or whatever. Studs, stud tight ends. I love taking the studs in a 10-team league. I want to have one of Kelce's or Ertz or this is a 10-team. But let's go to the most common league type, and we'll talk about early in the round, late in the round, what I might do. So says 12-team league standard, meaning 3 wide receiver, 2 RB, a flex tight end, and a tight end.
So standard two RB, three wide receiver,
two yeah. RB.
Right. And a flex.
Tight end flex.
One QB.
Yes, one QB, which is essentially a standard. That is what everybody's in.
Yeah.
That's the most common type. That's the kind of league where by the time you get to that flex spot, you're kind of like, ooh, if you didn't draft well, you're putting kind of a turd in there, right? So that type of league, I'm drafting in the top half of round one. We already kind of know what you're doing there, right? We're taking an RB with the first five picks or so. You can say that's correct.
Well, after the first four running backs go off the board, I'm liking the receivers before. I still have Devontae Adams and DeAndre Hopkins before after the four big running backs are off the board. The two receivers go for me, and then I'm looking at, you know, Le'Veon Bell. I'm looking at some of the other receivers there. We're looking at James Conner. If we're aggressive, we're looking at Nick Chubb. I think he's worth it there. So
I've heard a lot of Chubb falling to people in the second round, so it's really
tough. It happened all summer long. He was totally mispriced. And now, you know, what happened was I did a little digging, and still, the most people play fantasy football on Yahoo, even though I don't, you know, we don't anymore.
That ADP is terrible on him, right?
Yeah, right. The ADP actually on Nick Chubb is now, he's six overall. He was RB4, and now he's RB5. And all summer long, on ESPN, it's the opposite. They have him as like RB like 13. So, you know, it was down, it was up. It all depends on these default rankings mean a lot. And that's why, you know, default rankings on these mainstream websites sometimes can be misleading, other than just to see what the market's up to.
You have to watch them. So, all right, again, getting into specific, hey, listener, right, watcher, mm-hmm. you're drafting on ESPN. One of the things that you need to do is pay attention to ESPN's default ADP ranking, because your league mates are watching that. It's like a psychological torture when you see a player sitting at the top of the ADP. It's like, ESPN thinks he's the next best guy. I'm going to take him. And you know, your less confident league mate is just going to take that guy, even if he doesn't belong there, just because it's like, oh, that's what ESPN says. And then they'll also point at you and go, hey, ESPN, give me a fucking A on my draft, motherfucker. I'm good at this. Okay, good luck with that. But you know what I'm saying? So, like, depending on what platform you're on, the ADPs are different. As a sharp drafter, you just look at that and then play the draft how you like and try to think, oh, this guy might fall to me in the second round because they have him, even though I have him here, maybe I could take a chance, you know, with this guy, right? Am I coming through clear?
Yeah, I mean, you should use the mainstream website rankings and ADP just to see what the market is doing. The ADP is a useful guide, and again, sometimes it can poison our brains. Sometimes, you know, we see like whatever software we're using, and we see the rankings, and we just scroll down the list, and we say, okay, this guy's at the top. I could probably, this guy's lower. I can wait on him. I would say just go get your guys. That would be my draft strategy advice. First three rounds, is that overall what you're asking, right? Like, what am I doing?
Well, just with that one. Wait. Let me stick. Keep us on point. So we had a top. I started with the top four pick. I took a running back. I have a stud running back to start my team. Doesn't matter which of the four. 12-team league. Come back around. It's round two. I'm in the bottom four picks of round two. Who am I looking at here most of the time? And what strategy do you recommend? Like, am I waiting and seeing, okay, did Nick Chubb or Dalvin Cook or one of the studly kind of last remaining running backs fall to me? Is it a choice between... Yeah, or am I looking at a choice between Antonio Brown, maybe a Kittle here? Yeah, well,
you know, it's funny, and I'm sure you get this question a lot. One of the craziest questions I get, because it really doesn't make sense the way it's positioned, is, hey, how should I start my draft? Should I go running back, wide receiver, running back, tight end, QB, running back, wide? It's like, whoa. I always say, be fluid, be able to adapt to the draft. Let the draft fall to you. Be like water. If the water's going one way, move with it. If the room is giving you wide receiver value, take it. Be fluid. Don't come up and say, I have to draft a running back, I have to draft a wide receiver, I have to take a tight end this round. See where the value goes. So to answer your question directly, if you started off with a running back and a stud running back in round one, I think the world is your oyster. You have your choice. Take one of the premium tight ends if that's what you like. If you want to take one of the running backs who we like a lot, who's falling, a Joe Mixon, sure, go at it.
Joe Mixon might be there.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be there, sure. Yeah. And, you know, Kerryon Johnson. I mean, don't be afraid to do what you want. If you prefer a wide receiver because you want a little bit more well-balanced team, take one of those elite wide receivers. In the first three rounds, just don't screw it up. Just take the best player on the board. I think that is really what it comes down to. It's just take the best player on the board, regardless of position, in the first three rounds. Now, you get into the fourth round, now you have to start paying attention a little more to roster construction. So to answer your question directly, take the best player on the turnaround and on the 2-3 turn.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm doing there, and I've had this situation a bunch of times already this year, and next we'll talk about the late first-round pick and a different approach to it, but I've had that situation come up for me quite a few times, and it's always these choices. It's like, all right, the least favored kind of stud wide receiver made its way there. So it's either Antonio Brown or then the dreaded Mike Evans decision. Or, you know, it's like, well, Mixon is here, or maybe Mixon is gone, and then it's even again the dreaded Kerryon Johnson slash, and I have Kerryon Johnson law, I never take him there, but like, you know, that next
Aaron
layer
Jones,
of running
Aaron Jones is there.
Yeah, Aaron Jones is
Josh
usually like
Dubs.
Yes.
Marlon Mack.
I mean, yeah. All of that.
Listen, this is what you do. This is the simplest way to put it. In the first round, just draft the guy with the highest floor. Okay? If there's some upside there, great. They're all going to have upside. That's why they're first round picks. And then the second round, I would say take the highest floor again. All right? Now, in the third round, now that you can start going a little more upside. And as the rounds go down, you want less floor, more ceiling. Until you get to the end, the double-digit rounds, where you don't even care about floor. You're not taking Larry Fitzgerald. At that point, you're taking a wide receiver that could potentially be your wide receiver too all year long. Okay, I'm always passing on Mohamed Sanu for, say, one of the Pittsburgh wide receivers that might have a little juice. Now, if you've drafted where you started with floor and then worked your way up the ceiling, you can do that. But if you've taken all these swing for the fences in the early round, you're going to need some of these floor wide receivers like Sanu and Fitzgerald in the later rounds. And that usually doesn't win you the league. So start with...
I'll throw this out there that in best ball, it's a little different where I actually don't mind those floor guys.
Floor guys late. Yeah, that's fine. But we're in redraft now. Yeah. Like our the guys that are watching this have some real money on the line here. We just saw a guy that put up, he has $200 tonight. He worked hard for that $200 and he wants to turn that in to $2,000.
He also wants to rub it in the face of his friends.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Whoop their asses. I mean, that's more than the money. So, all right, we've talked about an early draft strategy. So I'll tell you, for me, it's come up a lot. And the way it's gone for me has been, I almost never take, when I take that early running back, unless one of the special tier two running back falls to me, which they generally won't, with those bottom picks in the second round, I actually go away from running back there, and I'll choose between a Kittle or Antonio Brown type player. If Antonio Brown's not there and I have to go to Evans, I will default to Kittle or Ertz.
What do you think about Antonio Brown and those grimy feet? I'm still in with him, man. There's no way that guy's not getting like covered in targets this year, right? I mean,
I don't like him as the first wide receiver off the board this year. I think his quarterback is a fucking turd. I don't think you know what I think of Carr. I don't think he's good. I hate his personality. I watched
Hard Knocks,
and it made me dislike him. I just dislike his awkwardness. I don't like his personality, but I don't like him as a quarterback. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's high on Derek Carr this year as a QB. But my point is, are you taking Antonio Brown the second round still?
He's still going to throw him the ball a lot. So like, whatever. I mean, I'll take Antonio Brown at PPR, and I'll take 12 targets a game. I'll take 8 or 9 receptions a game. Sure. I mean, listen, it's the end of the second round. He's Antonio Brown. What do you want? Do you want Mike Evans, peak Mike Evans, and his 80 receptions, 75 receptions per year? Or do I, and that's at peak Mike Evans. The guy just doesn't get as many receptions. Or do we want, you know, declining Antonio Brown and, you know, likely 110 receptions? I'll take the 110. The guy's still good.
I Yeah, not, you know, and there'll be frustrating weeks with Antonio Brown, just like there was when Ben Roethlisberger used to miss games, and they would have, they had a whole litany of backup QBs come through there. Antonio Brown would have some down weeks. Now, down weeks were like 14-point PPR weeks. You were used to getting 25 with him, and I think you're going to have those type of weeks just because Derek Carr targets are not the same as Ben Roethlisberger targets. So I expect some down weeks, but I also expect those mega monster weeks that Antonio Brown can put up when he gets you, you know, 14 catches for 180 yards and two scores. Those will still be there.
Still Antonio Brown. I like him a tier better than the next guy, which is Mike Evans. So, like, that's my point of differentiation in the second round. I'm like, if T-Bro is here, not T-Bow, but T-Bro is there, I'm in. But you know what? If it's not him and I got to choose between Mike Evans, who I'm not in love with,
who's Adam T-Bro?
Tony Brown.
Oh, Antonio Brown. I got
T-Bro.
You. T-Bro. Okay. All right. I like it.
Come on.
I know
I make up nicknames on the
spot.
Yeah.
No, I like it.
So if he's not there, I don't want Mike Evans. Hey, give me a little George Kittle. Take it. Take a little Kittle. So then in the third round, I've got that tight end. Now I've got an early third round. That's where I'm going to the Marlon Mack, Josh Jacobs group. Or even a Chris Carson. So now I've got my two running backs. I've got my elite tight end. Now, on the comeback round, you could do a lot of different things. Do I want to take Sony Michel and just lock in a bunch of really pretty good running backs on my team? Then I'm going to have a mediocre kind of group of wide receivers because my first ones are coming off kind of late. You know what I'm saying? So that's how a lot of my early round drafts have gone. It goes elite running back. It goes then elite tight end because he's there and no one else is elite. Then it goes, okay, decent running back round three, or take a shot at the wide receiver, and then you kind of get into this zero RB situation. So let me ask you, Seth, is that kind of how you see that early round pick in the 12-team draft? And when we're, you know, is that how it's gone for you so far?
Yeah, I mean, this is what it comes down to. If you're picking early in the draft, in the first four spots, you're probably going to have a RB-heavy strategy. If you're picking late in the first round, I believe it's optimal to go wide receiver heavy. Mainly, you know, picking at the back of the round, you can go Devontae Adams or Hopkins, and well, you're not probably going to get them at the back end, but, you know, Odell Beckham and Michael Thomas or some combination thereof. And you're almost forced into it. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster we like over there. You know, you can get Michael Thomas and Mike Evans, some combination of...
You could wind up with a really great situation with like a Connor and Reek as well. So there are...
Yeah, I mean, there's options. I just think it's going to be a little wide receiver heavy, and don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to go Kelsey and... it's that's really where you're headed, because the third, fourth round is loaded with really good running backs right now. I think if you have to end up going, you know, with a Josh Jacobs and Chris Carson as your 1-2 punch, or Marlon Mack, even Derrick Henry, I see Darius Geis is moving up. I probably wouldn't go that high with him. But even Duke Johnson, which, you know, you and I have a difference of opinion on, I think that someone like Duke Johnson, you know, he was catching 65 passes in a Hugh Jackson offense, which was horrible. He could do that at least here. They upgraded the offensive line in Houston. They're going to toss to the running backs, even though they haven't in, you know, yet. Doesn't mean they didn't have the personnel to do it. And if he just gets only 150 carries, which seems like he can walk into that, he's going to be a very good running back for you. Probably, you know, a high-end running back too. So there's some really good options. Hopefully, you know, you have to, that you don't have to talk yourself into. And if you do, you shouldn't take them. But I wouldn't be afraid to go wide receiver, or tight end, wide receiver in the first two rounds, because I know there's some good running backs that I personally like in the 3, 4, and 5 turn.
One nice thing that about wide receiver, and you've talked about this a lot, is the lack of having to make a choice. Yeah. Like, that person isn't going to be in, you know, DFS Army Slack chat in the season-long Says channel, you know, asking, hey, who should I start this week? You know, Robbie Anderson or Mike Williams.
That's a really important point. And just to explain that is that running backs have year-to-year volatility, but week-to-week, they're pretty projectable. Wide receivers are the exact opposite. They have week-to-week volatility, but they have year-to-year consistency, meaning at the high end, Julio Jones. You know, some weeks he's going to, you know, give you 8 points. Some weeks it's going to be 28 points. But you're, even after an 8 point outing, you're not considering benching him. You just put him in there and you leave him in there. So you're going to get your points at the end of the year. But if you go running back heavy at the beginning of your draft, and then your wide receivers are, you know, like you said, Robbie Anderson, and a couple other players in that tier, Mike Williams, Calvin Ridley. After one or two bad weeks if they get maybe two catches for, you know, 30 yards and then another one, four catches for 38 yards and no touchdown, then you're going to start thinking, should I bench them? And then when you bench them, you know what happens, geek. They go off on your bench.
Go off on your bench.
And you put them back in. It's just a nightmare deciding. The worst part of fantasy football for me and is these 50-50 calls, and usually you get them wrong. But if you have wide receivers, you could just set it and forget it and leave them in there. And even if, you know, Michael Thomas has a bad week, you know you're not taking him out. Whereas running backs are more projectable, and you just know if they're projected to get the carries, you just stick them in there. So there is an advantage to having the elite wide receivers as your first two round picks.
Absolutely. So, all right. So we've already jumped into back end of the first round. People who are starting with, you know, picks. And it's tough to do the middle of the first round because there's so much weird shit that goes on in the center, and it's not clear like who you're going to get on the comeback. But like in that bottom of the first round area, end of the first round, you're picking 10, 11, 12. A lot of the time, it's one of those two picks is probably and should probably be an elite wide receiver because those elite wide receivers dry up super fast. Like I said, the guys taking the first group of super elite running backs, they will not generally have an elite wide receiver to pick from at the end of the second round. But the people in the back end of the first half, you've got every option on the table. You've got Odell, you've got Mike Thomas, you've got Tyreek Hill, you've got Juju Smith-Schuster, you've got all of these people to choose from, and you could do an RB. For me, I'm going to look at which RB is there. Right. And if it's one of the ones that I think I is dropping, if it's a Chubb or if it's a Terminator Connor, then I like that dude, you know, pick 10, 9, 11. And then I'm just going to wait and see which super elite wide receiver falls. I don't care which one it is. If it's Michael Thomas, okay. If it's Tyreek Hill, sure. Juju Smith-Schuster, happy to have you on my team. Yeah. I don't care who it is. You know, any one of those guys are fantastic.
What'd you think about Brandon had a question. He said, are you guys taking a backup tight end kicker or QB?
Hell no, we're not taking a backup kicker.
Well, yeah, backup kicker, no. I wouldn't mess with that. A backup QB, it really depends. If you drafted Pat Mahomes or one of the top four or five elite guys, I probably would not clog my roster with a backup QB. But if you took someone like Kyler Murray, someone that, you know, may have some risk, which we like the ceiling, but the floor could literally be zero, then I'm probably more apt to back him up with a high floor. It could be like a Phillip Rivers is the, you know, quintessential example. And someone you can always get is Nick Foles. Nick Foles is just...
I don't want that dude clogging him up.
I'm just saying, like, I meant that he's on the waiver wire. Jacoby Brissett is a good backup plan if your A plan doesn't work out for you. You know,
when I get a backup QB, if I took like Cam Newton,
You're not sure about, but it's okay. But there's always going to be somebody on the waiver wire. There's always going to be a Joe Flacco and Eli, Daniel Jones eventually. I mean, somebody's going to be out there. Now, backup tight end, sure. I mean, that, especially if you could start a tight end to flex, I don't mind taking two tight ends. And sometimes, you know, if I get stuck in the third or fourth round, I'll pivot to a premium tight end. I like O.J. Howard more than you, but if I drafted O.J. Howard, I wouldn't mind, you know, also just in our super flex league the other day, someone stocked up on tight ends. I was a little thin and I traded away a QB for a tight end in a super flex league because I was desperate.
Tight end that I've been stocking up on, chock full of shares for me on my bench, has been Greg Olsen because, you know what?
Yeah.
A, he's available like super late in the draft. Or at least he was, or he has been. And, you know, everybody thinks he's going to hurt his foot. I get it. He probably will hurt his foot. But who cares if he's healthy? Every week that he's healthy, he's actually probably better. Like, especially if I took, like, an end of the top TE1 group tight end. Like I got, if I've got like, I don't know, David Njoku or Austin Hooper or somebody like that, I think Olsen, a healthy Olsen, is really a top 5 or 6 tight end. So like I'm pretty much playing him until he hurts the foot.
Yeah, and since this is a last-minute draft advice podcast, too, that's a really good piece of advice right there, the Rick Olsen life preserver play. But there was another question. Maybe you should take this one. Austin Hansen asked, for a 4-point passing TD with pretty large penalty, -2, does that change your strategy for drafting a QB? Do you want to take this?
All I'm going to say for this is, listen, this type of setting does benefit the rushing quarterback quite a bit. So if you weren't like convinced by our high ranking of Lamar Jackson to take him, you know, as a QB1 this season, then in that style of offense where the passing quarterbacks are only going to get 4 points for a passing touchdown, but 6 points come from the rush, then sure. I mean, you know, bump up your rushing quarterback just a little bit. But in the end of the day, for me, it's not going to be anything where I'm going to go too crazy changing my opinion. Most leagues give you 4 points for passing touchdown, and it doesn't really affect any. I still like rushing quarterbacks because they have a higher floor.
Yeah, the running quarterbacks, basically, here's a good rule of thumb. The running quarterbacks get a little bump in value in the 4-point passing touchdown because they run them in. In a 6-point passing touchdown, the running quarterbacks the value levels out a little bit.
All right, so this is the Bold Calls DFS Army season long fantasy football podcast. Before I get to the bold calls, guys, we have amazing things coming up this daily fantasy football season. I can't even detail everything that we have going on. There are things that even DFS Army subscribers don't know are coming. I have some tricks up my sleeve in terms of some tools that we're putting together in conjunction with our sports betting side and projections based off of props and all kinds of things that are going to blow your fucking minds this year. We're going to cover every single slate, showdowns, afternoons, mornings, evenings, prime time. I've got Cash Keg, one of the best daily fantasy sports players in the world, and I shit you not, this guy is the guy I look up to, and I call and say, hey, you know, show me how to play better, okay? And that Keg is here breaking down each slate as well every single week. We've got Season Long Says in Slack, answering your questions, sit, start, looking at your fucking lineups. He is like the best, man. He loves looking at your shit and being like, who do I start? He's got an answer for you. I'm like, I don't know.
Waiver Wire podcast. That's I want to tell you the listeners about the Waiver Wire podcast. We're going to be doing a Waiver Wire podcast, not just who to pick up, but we're going to record it Monday night. We're going to post it Tuesday. It might be a day later at times, but how much to bid in your fab leagues on each player?
Can I tell you about this? How excited I personally am for this. I get busy during the fantasy football season with daily fab. You know, I got a job involving football, daily fantasy sports. And you know what? It distracts me from my season-long leagues. So I'm excited for your Waiver Wire podcast so I know on Monday night who the hell I should be picking up in my league. 50% of your league is how you draft. The other 50% is in-season management. In-season management, that's why I said the Gordon people, you done fucked up. But it's not all over for you. In-season management is 50% of what's going to happen. Listen to Says every Monday night. He's going to tell you, Philip Lindsay looked good week 1 because this motherfucker called that shit last season. I saw it happen live. We were in leagues together. My man emptied his fob in week 1, got Philip Lindsay on every team. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And the Players Club is coming. Hell yeah. They're going to kill. Wait. More money for your bankroll, Brandon. But my man, Season Long Says, had Philip Lindsay in every single league that we were in together. He emptied his fob week 1. I'm like, what are you, nuts? What if that guy fades into obscurity? He said, trust me. Next thing I know, he's got what was worthy of a second round draft pick picked up after the season starts. This is why I say in-season management is king, and you've got the best in the world helping you out. That's awesome. And
yeah,
this is what I use to get better. So cool. All right. Bold calls. Bold calls for the 2019 fantasy. How come no one told me we're doing a bold call segment? I would have thought of this beforehand, but I'm going to throw it over to you, Seth. Give me a couple of bold calls, unexpected happenstances that the world of outside fantasy football does not know, think, expect to happen that you're going to say, yes, this is my bold call. Hit me.
Okay, so let's define first what a bold call is. A bold call, you see them on like the NFL Network sometime, and they're outrageous. Like, this guy's going to run for 400 yards today. It just, that's not what a bold call is. A bold call is a specific set of circumstances goes right for a specific player. Basically, they're about their 80th percentile outcome. So if all things break right, what's in their range of outcomes if it all goes well? So we call these our FIRE. There you go. There's the graphic. There you go, geek. Fire calls. Fire calls. All right. So, he's laughing.
I get so excited from the technology.
Yeah. Well worth the dough.
I'm still sitting over here with my cell phone trying to play a song, and you're fucking throwing shit up on the screen. I don't even know how you're doing it.
Before you had me doing these, you know, we were doing them on like a cell phone. That's true. That's so funny. And, you know, like I said, the technology gets better and makes the program better. But all right. First bold call is Lamar Jackson will finish as the QB1. Fire
is the bold call.
Now let me explain. There, you know, we've talked about how Lamar Jackson is a better pure runner than Michael Vick. So 1,000 yards is in his 80th percentile outcome. So if Lamar Jackson runs for 1,000 yards this year, passes for another, say, 3,500 to 3,800 yards, and let's say he has an amazing running touchdown season where he scores 7 or 8 running touchdowns, passes for another 19 to 24, he's the QB1, man. Those rushing yards, that's the key to his success. Now, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen. What I'm saying is that it's the – your door's open there. There you go. Is that it's in the 80th percentile of outcomes. And I'm my bold call number one is Lamar Jackson – QB1.
You were not kidding when you said bold call. Now, obviously, there's some unlikelihoods there. I think.
These are all unlikely, but they're possible.
Can I have a bold call about an expected? Because Austin brings up a point. I've got a bold call about a potential geek rap that may happen over the course of this season on the Players Club DFS Army VIP podcast. And it will be based upon, listen, in order for this to happen, Dalvin Cook, the oft-injured, will have to get injured again. But my bold call is, you may hear the theme song to Alexander Hamilton redone by me in honor of Alexander Matheson.
Our founding father, Alexander Matheson?
Matheson, yes. I was recently at the Hamilton Broadway show, and I was inspired. I've put the pen to the paper, and there is a rap already pre-written. I'm not gonna spoiler it here on this, but it does require an injury to Dalvin Cook for this to ever go into effect. So that's not really a bold call. I'm just letting you know, Alexander Matheson.
That is cool. And by the way, Sean said that if that happens with Lamar, that they're winning the Super Bowl. So yeah, I'm right there.
That would be a massive improvement. We love you, Austin. That would be a massive improvement for a Lamar Jackson who was thrown for 150 yards a game this past year. So let's not go crazy.
It's in his 80th percentile of outcomes. All right,
give me another bold call. You've got
Number two. Bold call number two. O.J. Howard finishes as the tight end one, and he is the consensus one for next season. Let me give you my rationale. When he was on the field last year, he led the league in air yards, and he was sprinting past people. For tight ends, he just looks the part. And he got injured, and he was just coming on. In a juiced-up Bruce Arians offense, he is going to be supercharged. Now, as long as he stays healthy, that is. Now, again, is it likely? No. But a bowl call is the 80th percentile or greater outcome. I could see a world where O.J. Howard is the tight end one, and he's consensus top two tight end for next season.
I've got one. I think that's crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, you know.
That's the idea of bold call, right? Yeah. I've got one for you.
Yeah, by the way, I see Sean said Lamar said it himself. It was a horrible year. Yeah, we agree with you, Sean.
We talked about this on a lot of our pods with Lamar Jackson. We are on Lamar Jackson above everybody else. So, you know, if he done fucks up, big shit. What? You drafted him in the eighth round? It didn't hurt you. But if it works out, what Cez and I said, which is they're going to build that offense around him this year, and he'll be able to do better in the passing game, you will see a market improvement in this guy's fantasy scoring. Here's my bold call. Here's my bold call. I've got some bold calls. You bold motherfucker. Miles Sanders, in the second half of the season, produces as a high-end RB1 on a week-to-week basis in that Philadelphia Eagles offense.
Fire. Here it goes. Here's the fire.
He will lead your team to a Super Bowl championship. You will throw the belt over your shoulder. You will slap hot chicks on their ass in your photo that you send to your league mates because Miles Sanders led your team as he became the full three-down starter the second half of the season for the Eagles, and he led your fantasy team to championship glory. Bold call.
Now, that is a good call. I'm not even so sure that's a bold call because I almost expect that to happen.
That's the bold stuff, though, man. You can get him RB27.
Yep. No, that's a good one. That's a good one. You and I, we've had Miles Sanders as RB1 in Dynasty since the beginning of the process. We haven't wavered. We both love him, especially in that offense.
And Wendy Smalls was the illest.
Okay.
His styles are now played out like Arnold, what you talking about, Willis.
Yes. Yes. Little biggie
He's
right
no longer
there.
With the team.
Yep. Now, final bold call. Final bold call now. This one's going to contradict what you just said, but
Howard, the RB1.
Yeah. I will say, okay.
How about a Darius Geis bold call? I mean, can we get some juice?
Well, I don't know. All right, well, here's my final bold call that I prepared for you. That one, a rookie running back will finish ahead of all three of the rookie running backs going in the first six rounds. Now, what I mean by that is Josh Jacobs, David Montgomery, and Miles Sanders. Those are the ones being drafted in the first six rounds. A rookie running back will finish ahead of those three in fantasy points per game.
A rookie running back. Name as of yet undetermined.
We don't know who it is. But I'm going to take, if I was betting the rookie runners versus the top three taken, I'm taking the field. Bold call.
That's bold. I like it. I think that's a lot of bold calls for this pod, guys. Listen, again, DFS Army members, if you're drafting tonight, if you're drafting tomorrow, if you're drafting this week, good luck. Kick some ass. Use the draft kit. You can use the Cez rankings. You can use the Geek ranking. You could sort by DFS Army average, which basically is the Nutless Monkey version of just melding our two rankings together and kind of taking them as an average.
But most of all, look at both of our rankings. Look at other analysts' rankings and then make your own decision. Take our opinions for what they are, but use your own eyeballs. It doesn't help you to just take what we do and then robotically just do it, which is fine. You can do that.
Actually, I don't mind that.
Yeah, I don't. But the best way to do it is also trust your instincts. You watch a lot of football. You sit there on Sunday and you watch for 9 hours. You spend a ton of time doing DFS. You spend a ton of time watching these players. You do research. You're online. You think about football all the time. And even if you don't, you're watching SportsCenter. You know more than you think you do. Trust your gut. Use our guide, but then make your own decision.
And I'm going to add to that, don't trust your gut. Just follow what we say. You don't know. You have no idea. So
we'll teach you how to be a better fantasy football player.
No, seriously. Follow the notes. there's notes, there's reasoning, everything. Draft your studs, then manage your team well in season. You're going to have a great year. It's going to be awesome. I hope you didn't get caught up in the Andrew Luck, Damian Williams, Melvin Gordon nonsense this offseason so far. But even if you did, it's not over yet. Good in-season management can get you past even a mediocre draft. Anybody who's listening right now who is out there, there will be two live DFS Army member or staff league drafts coming tonight and tomorrow night.
And by the way, we're going to post the link. You can watch those drafts live.
That's what I was just going to say. You can watch it live. You could see it happen. If that's exciting and fun to see, you'll get to see my strategy in a draft, I think, tonight. You'll get to see me going up against season long says here tomorrow. That's all good stuff. And of course, we are here to answer your questions. I will be back, as you guys know, constantly with daily fantasy sport. I'm going all daily fantasy sports pretty much after this pod. This is it for me. So after I'm going all DFS, the season long channel is open in DFS Army Slack. That's the channel to talk about your season long team and your season long leagues and all of that shit. Good luck. Good luck in your draft, Sez, man. Good luck in your draft as well.
I'll see everyone in the chat rooms and look for my waiver wire podcast. I'll be helping you out on how to place those bids.
There we go. Good luck, everyone.
All right. Later.